Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. Alex Doherty from the Tennessean coming up at 7:30. We'll get into the hot topics with the Nashville Predators with him. Charles Robinson at 8 o'clock talking Titans and all things NFL. Taking your thoughts all show long, 615-737-1025. Our text line, still not operational. So hit up our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, or join us in the YouTube chat where it has been spirited all morning here on the program. 615-737-1025. Joe Rexrode, college football season right around the corner. We've been discussing it all week long. SEC Media Day is coming up next week, which will feature, I'm sure, some interesting comments maybe from some of these coaches that we're getting ready to talk about. As we look ahead into this season, I do think there's one coach that probably stands out above the others as in relates to just storylines heading into this year. But as you look at the college football landscape, the changing of the conferences, Texas, Oklahoma joining the SEC, the nice regional matchups in the Big Ten that feature teams on the West Coast playing teams on the East Coast, all these different things. What are some coaching storylines, some coaching headlines that excites you, that gets you fired up for college football season heading into this year?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest coaching stories, obviously every year the hot seat is one of the things we talk about. We talked about Clark Lee yesterday.
Yep.
So there's that. But, yeah, look, I think you start with Deion Sanders, and I am all over the place, maybe like a lot of people. Maybe you're like me. I thought it was going to be a disaster. And then last year I was like, oh, my gosh. His pregame speeches are amazing. They just beat TCU. TCU is supposed to be like a 10 or 11 win team this year. Holy crap. He's got, you know, his kid is a really good player at quarterback, and Travis Hunter might be the best player in the game, et cetera, et cetera. And then they got destroyed by Oregon and won one more game the rest of the year and went 4-8, which is still a huge jump. But I have come all the way back around to I don't think it's going to work. And a lot of it is his approach to recruiting.
Total disregard of high school recruiting?
Yeah. There's no way that's going to work. I understand how important the portal is, but, like, there's just no way in my mind. And if he proves me wrong, great. If you aren't still just as devoted to high school recruiting, especially in football, I just don't think that's ever going to change. He's got Hunter and he's got Shadur Sanders this year, and I think they're both – Hunter is definitely a first-round pick. I mean, yep. Hunter is a special player, probably a corner in the NFL, but I don't know. I mean, he could be a receiver too. He's that good. I think Shadur Sanders is probably a first-round pick, but now when you lose –
I guess I need to see a whole lot more from him before I'm wrapped up in some of the hype he's getting right now. I don't for the life of me understand it.
Yeah?
He's not that good. I don't understand it.
He's pretty good, man. I mean, you know – is he like top five? Clearly, the top guy in the draft. No, but I think he's talented. I mean, you know how it goes with quarterbacks in the
sure.
NFL draft. I think he's definitely. I'll be shocked if he doesn't go in the first round next year. I mean, I think he's really good. You know, I don't know that I'd build my whole franchise around him. But regardless, these guys are going to be gone, and then I don't know where this is going for Deion. So. This year is going to be fascinating. I mean, you better win pretty big this year. You better, and they've got some other good players, but you better win. And obviously, he's
new conference for them too, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're in the Big 12 again. So, I think the last time they were there was the Big 8. I don't know. I guess not. I guess it was the Big 12.
I guess.
But yeah, they're back. They're back there. So to try to keep track of that. So I mean, they're just. They're, again, going to be right up there among the weekly most important stories. Chef Rand says, Deion's the man who is definitively better than Colorado in the Big 12. Oh, man, he's mad at you. Look at the stats. 27. Is that right that he had 27 TDs and only three picks last year? He threw only three picks? I didn't know that. I think he's good.
He's fine. He's not number one overall pick in the draft good that people are talking about.
No, I agree. Yeah, I'll be surprised if he's number one overall. Oh, it's funny, though. Like, I guess people think Carson Beck is, and I don't buy
that either.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know
but
that
you know someone.
I think the real answer is I don't know as we sit here today. Like last year at this time, we knew that Caleb Williams was going to be the number one pick in the draft.
And that
I don't know that
that
person
high.
Exists this year.
No, for sure. No, this quarterback draft will definitely be a step back from the last one. I mean, especially when you had Jaden Daniels emerge.
Right.
Now someone will emerge.
Somebody's
going to
emerge, yes.
And even like J.J. McCarthy, right. I certainly didn't think he was going to be a first-round pick 1 year ago, right? So, but I don't know, we'll see. I think he's definitely a first-round pick, and I think he's good enough for that. Who is definitively better than Colorado in the Big 12? Yeah. I mean, that's a
who's
fair question.
Who's in the Big 12?
Yeah, I mean, right. I mean, they've got like UCF now, and they've Arizona and Arizona State, right? I think they got Arizona and Arizona State.
Shout out
State.
To Oklahoma State.
Sure.
Mike Gundy, we were talking about him earlier.
Yeah, actually, Oklahoma State, I mean, all their flaws and stuff aside, they actually could be pretty good.
Well, and also, like, who's definitively better than the team that went 4-8 last year? I'm sure you could probably find a couple.
I mean, honestly, this is a great exercise for everybody who is into college football. Just go ahead and, like, read through each conference and just let yourself know
it's unbelievable.
Who is in every conference. So let's do that right now with the Big 12. So the Big 12 now is Arizona, Arizona State, BYU, Baylor, Cincinnati, Colorado, Houston, Iowa State, Kansas, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, TCU, Texas Tech, UCF, Utah, and West Virginia.
Yep.
Of course. That's a totally reasonable conference of teams.
Why not?
You got West Virginia over here. You got Arizona, Arizona State, BYU, and Utah over there. You can go way down to get to Houston and Texas Tech. You can move on up to Ohio and get a little Cincinnati. No, it totally makes sense.
What's the win total, the projected win total for Colorado this year? Let's look it up.
Yeah, what is
I
the over-under?
What's your guess?
The over-under
for the
on
team
Colorado?
That apparently is just definitively better than everybody in the Big 12.
Well, I would still think, and I don't have their schedule in front of me, but like, guys, it's got to be 6.5, 7.5.
The over-under is 5.5 wins.
5.5.
Because they're not very good. That's what I've been go look at their roster.
Yeah.
Their roster is, they have Shador Sanders, they have Travis Hunter, they have Shiloh on the other side of the ball, and that's about it.
They have
they're not very good.
They've got the linebacker who's supposed to be really good.
The over-under is 5.5 wins.
First-round pick.
So the battle is to become bowl eligible for Colorado.
And of course, now that question has been posed, though, now I am wondering who is good in the Big 12.
I mean,
year?
I would assume
is the Big 12 just total trash.
I mean, yes. First off, I would assume like Oklahoma State, they're over unders 8.5 wins.
Are they the favorite?
Let's see here. I mean, by the numbers, it looks like they are the favorite. No, it would be Utah. Utah is the favorite.
Oh yeah. Oh duh. Yeah.
Utah.
Yeah.
I forgot they're in the Big 12.
Exactly. Like when he said that, I was like, well, now that you mention it, but yes, we should dunk on Chef Rand.
Utah's over-under, by the way, is 9.5.
Utah is definitely better than, I mean, Cam Rising is back. That's clearly the favorite of the Big 12 that I didn't even know what the heck the league looked like.
Of the FanDuel Sportsbook odds. Utah, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, Kansas, Iowa State, UCF, Texas Tech, Arizona, West Virginia all have better odds. Oh, and TCU all have better odds than Colorado.
Other than that, Chef Rand, you're really onto something. Now, look, Deion does think that the offensive line is way better, and they got the Bengals secondary coach to be their DC. They had the whole OC thing last year, and Pat Shurmur. I'm a big fan, I'm a big fan personally of Pat Shurmur. I don't know, we'll see how that works out with him as OC. But as far as ranked teams, Arizona is Arizona could be a pretty good team. So, yeah, there's a lot of teams here that Jalen Daniels is back at Kansas. So, I don't know. It's a huge year. If Deion does not win big this year, I just think the writing's on the wall. And it's just going to end up being that Deion, you could still, if you're Colorado, say, hey, we got – people have talked about Colorado football the last couple of years more than they did since Darian Hagan and Eric Bieniemy and Bill McCartney those days. So that's great. But it looks like to me like it's going to just basically be Deion coming in getting some money and getting out of there, and then it's just going to go back to a disaster. That's my guess.
I largely like Deion. Like, I think he's pretty funny. Like, and yeah. I think he's a good football coach. I don't know that he's a good program builder, right? Like, does he actually – I mean, so far the answer would be no, just based on the results. Like, but does he actually care about sticking around and building a program in terms of the high school recruiting and everything that goes into it? Like, there are people that think that once his sons are gone – that he's just going to move on. Mm-hmm. I don't know what he's going to do.
He certainly can.
Yeah, I don't know how long he wants to. I mean, he doesn't have to do anything. I don't know how long he wants to get in this. I don't know if he's at Colorado for the long haul or if he's looking for the next job or I don't know what his motivation is. But if you're going to get the next job, yeah. Like, don't you kind of have to win at Colorado?
Do. Yeah. I mean, a year ago, even like when they it was still going well for them, it was like, okay, which major program is poaching Deion?
Right.
And I think he's poachable. I mean, he had a lot to say about HBCUs and how important that was to him. And then, okay, I'll go to Colorado. It's not like Colorado is some job where, I mean, it's a Power 5 job, so
sure,
there's a lot more advantages. But still, I mean, I think that he absolutely would go to a bigger program than Colorado. But, yeah, I don't think he's going to have that opportunity. And look, I'm here to be proven wrong because I keep changing my opinion on him. But I think this is headed toward, well, thanks for the memories, Deion. It was a fun couple years, and Colorado stinks again.
Well, it was at least a heck of a television event. And I will say this. Like I said, Shador's good. I don't know that he's – I'm not convinced he's first-round pick good. I'm certainly not convinced that he's number one overall pick good that some people are talking about. Travis Hunter is an absolute stud.
Yeah.
Like, Hunter is – unbelievable.
Oh, he's incredible.
Yeah. 615-737-1025. We'll get to more coaching storylines heading into the 2024 college football season coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Alex Doherty from the Tennessean will join us coming up at 7:30. We'll get into all things Nashville Predators with him. Taking your thoughts on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Discussing the top storylines in the coaching world heading into the 2024 college football season. We've discussed the Deion Sanders part of this. Joe, as you look at the rest of the landscape of college football heading into the season, what are some other coaching storylines that stand out to you as we sit here today on July the 11th?
Well, maybe I'm just a negative person because I think about this in terms of coaches, you know, in the hot seat. We've talked about Billy Napier. Now, friend of the show, Dennis Dodd, he does this every year. He does his hot seat rankings, which I enjoy. And he has a rating system of like 5 down to 0. You know, 5 is like 5, the way he describes it, is win or be fired.
Yeah.
Down to like 0, like untouchable. You get to like 4, start improving now. 3, pressure is mounting, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So this just came out. He just had his hot seat rankings that came out yesterday. So, he has one coach. Have you read this?
No.
Okay, good.
I have not.
Yeah, thank you for unmuting and letting me know.
You're welcome.
One coach with a rating of 5 in college football. Can you guess who that coach is?
Oh, man. I mean, my guess would be Billy Napier, but the way you're phrasing this question makes me think it's not Billy Napier.
It's not. Billy Napier, if he's listing these, I think he's listing these in order. If he's listing these, I think so, then he has Billy Napier as his highest 4.
Okay.
All right. And by the way, Clark Lee, if he's going in order, would be his 4th hottest seat with the 3rd highest 4 rating.
I'm going to go off the wall because I don't have an answer for you because my mind's not working, but I'm going to go off the wall for one that I could see getting fired if they don't win this year, even though the record would suggest that it's asinine to even suggest it, and that's Ryan Day from Ohio State.
Interesting. Yeah, Ryan Day is one of the most fascinating. First of all, he's on VAR discussion. He's right in the middle of it, you know. And I'm telling you, the Vrabster, stay head on a swivel, Vrabster. Head on a swivel. We'll get
things
to that.
Really went downhill after you wrote that piece. I know.
I know. It's all going to come back around. Don't worry. But yeah, the one coach he has with a five is Sam Pittman of Arkansas.
Okay, I can see that.
And it is interesting because
yeah, Petrino back in the house.
Well, and that's the thing. As insane as it would be to me, although as perfect it was as it would be also in college football, that Bobby Petrino could again be the Arkansas head coach. He is now there as the OC, and at the very least, if it goes terribly this year,
he'll be the interim.
He's the interim, right? Yeah. So he's got Hunter Yurecek has this. I mean, if I'm Sam Pittman, I'd love to know all the discussions that led to Bobby Petrino coming in, because I'm guessing it wasn't all Sam Pittman, you know, beating the drum.
That would be my guess.
So I think that's a good. I mean, you can make a case. You can make a case for Napier being just as much on the hot seat. He also has Dave Aranda. Then he goes to Clark Lea. So, okay. But yes, Pittman. Think about the transition for him and how fast. We talk about Deion's within 1 year. I mean, Sam Pittman not long ago was one of the toasts of college football.
Yeah,
but it went bad, man. It went bad, and this league will. That's what this league does to you. So now Ryan Day, I think absolutely is. Is I think he has him as a let me see where he is. Yeah, so he has Day as a three, which is pressure is mounting. I think you could make a case for Day to be a four. But you're talking about an incredible offseason for them in acquisition. You're talking about Michigan defending national champ, defending as won the Big Ten, 3 years in a row? I mean, if he doesn't, forget the playoff. Of course they're going to be in the playoff.
Yeah.
And then what you do in the playoff, of course, matters. I mean, I don't know that he needs to win the national championship. He needs to win the Big Ten and beat Michigan. If he doesn't do it, I cannot imagine that he survives this year.
That's what I'm saying. Because if you just looked at his overall record, you would say, well, what are you guys talking about?
Sure.
Because the overall record's great. But that place, we've talked about it, they have been basically – the only recession-proof college football program for the last 35 years. And if you can't win against Michigan and you don't get yourself deep into a national championship discussion, you're going to be out at that place. I think there's pretty significant pressure on him heading into this year. I really do.
By the way, that recession-proof, really it's 60 years.
It really is.
You go back to in the mid-60s, Michigan State was the better program than them, and they were but you get to Woody Hayes and those great teams of the late 60s, it's been almost 60 years that they basically have been a random bad year here or there, and other than that, they are right there to compete for championships. So yeah, he's a fascinating one. I also think Mario Cristobal at Miami is a really fascinating coach this year. It's an upgrade at coaching, and I think he's good. He's an amazing recruiter. They have loaded up again. The transfer portal was huge for them, and that was one of the worst instances of in-game coaching I've ever seen last year.
It's awful.
When they lost that game.
Just take a knee.
And it's just been really disappointing. $80 million, 10 years, $80 million for Mario Cristobal. Cristobal and Napier – is that week one? Miami, Florida.
Yes.
The loser of that game, man, it's going to get ugly and
get hot
real fast.
I'll throw a couple at you that I think are pretty obvious in this discussion. One of which is, I think, an intrigue factor, and another that I think when we start talking about pressure, I think is still there. Obviously, Alabama with DeBoer coming in and replacing Nick Saban. There is a lot of intrigue there. I mean, we know what that is, and you're following a legend. And how do you handle that in year one? And then really, for him, it's really a 3 to 5 year, where are you taking the program over the next 3 to 5 years? So, obviously, that's very intriguing. I'll throw another one at you. James Franklin at Penn State. They're always good, never quite good enough. And, you know, we thought last year maybe – that was the team, and they had a ton of talent. And it just feels like offensively they're always stuck in the mud and cannot get anything going through the passing game especially. Penn State, I mean, they're going to be good again this year. I mean, they're on the short list of like national championship contenders when you just go by the odds. I mean, Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, Bama, Ole Miss, LSU, and then it goes right to Penn State. Like, they're always on the short list, but they're one of those teams. This is a bad comparison, but it's just the first one that came to mind. They're like the Cowboys for me. They're always like in the discussion, but I never have any confidence whatsoever that they're actually going to break through.
Yeah, that's a good one, no doubt. And obviously, like, they've struggled, I mean, really, especially with Michigan.
Yeah.
But they've struggled for the most part. It's just beating those two teams, you know. And the Big Ten with the East is just has been an insane division. They've had a complete imbalance, which when they changed it, when they had legends and leaders, I mean, we made fun of it, but actually the divisions made sense. Like, last year it didn't, and the timing doesn't match up. They've had in the past amazing receiver talent, right? They haven't been able to put it all together. I think Drew Aller, not Drew Allar, right?
I believe you're correct.
Like, last year he looked like a freshman, but he's super talented. If they could have had him a year later with the defense they had last year, they might have been able to do it. Well, apparently, you know, like, this is a guy who NFL scouts love, and there's a lot of talent. So that's a big one. This is, you know, they're also one of those teams that, you know, the 12-team playoff,
yeah.
Like, in some ways, maybe it removes some pressure from a guy like James Franklin because they're going to get in. And if they don't,
they're going to get in.
Well, right.
Yeah.
Now, if they don't, then it's a huge problem. But at least to get into the playoff. But I think they probably have to do something. And another guy I'd throw at you, of course, is Brian Kelly. I mean, Brian Kelly this year is – he totally changed up his – you know,
brought
defensive
his family
coaching
down there.
Staff. What's that?
Brought his family down
yeah,
there.
Yeah, family is finally family's with him. That's you can't, you know, you can't, after you squandering what you squandered last year, you gotta come the other way this year.
I'll throw one more very quickly your way before we get to Alex Doherty, which I think is just gonna further the discussion of the NIL stuff. Dabo at Clemson. Big year for them. Like, can they return to being a team that is relevant in the college football playoff discussion?
Yeah, I think they can. I think they can. I think they have the team to do it. But again, if not, then yes. It's already started to turn on him, but he needs this team to do that, reestablish Clemson.
Alex Doherty from the Tennessean coming up next. We'll get into all things Nashville Predators with him. Charles Robinson at 8 o'clock. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. Talking a little Preds hockey, and to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Alex Doherty from the Tennessean. Alex, good morning. How are you?
Doing great. How are y'all doing?
We're really good, man. Good. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Alex, I want to start with a story you came out with yesterday at the Tennessean, and for those who may have missed it, you can check it out at Tennessean.com. But former Preds captain Greg Johnson, who, as we know, tragically passed away from a self-inflicted gunshot wound, you came out with a story about him being diagnosed with CTE, of course, after his death. His brain was studied, and that was the conclusion that was drawn there. Just what did you make of kind of this story, your findings in all this, and the discussion at large with CTE, concussions, and the National Hockey League, and how that's all being handled as we move forward here?
Yeah, I think this makes the 16th or 17th NHLer. I've seen both numbers. I think Greg Johnson is now the 16th or 17th former NHL player to have been diagnosed with CTE. Now, I don't know where that compares with the NFL or any other sports. I know that a lot of sports are dealing with this now. The NHL has an issue here, and I think that Greg Johnson is a good example that this is not only about the fighting, right? This is not about punches to the head with the enforcers from the 80s and 90s, because Greg Johnson had one career NHL fight.
Yeah.
He was not a fighter. He was a very physical player. He was not. He along with, you know, Scott Walker and Legwand, established the whole predator way, you know, being a two-way forward, being defensively responsible, but putting in some goals too. And his physical abilities on the ice were just that's how he played. He was very physical. Of course, what I've learned in doing more research about this, and I think we're going to look at this more, is, you know, it's not always about, you know, physical, someone hitting you in the head. It's about, you know, acceleration and deceleration of the head as you are flying around the ice and contact and everything. And I also talked to a former teammate of Greg Johnson's yesterday, or 2 days ago rather, who said that, you know, this is it wasn't surprising because, I mean, so many concussions, you know, just add up, and all the data suggests that, you know, more concussions you have, the more likely you are to experience CTE symptoms. But, you know, the story is very tragic. You know, Greg Johnson, I mean, we remember his time here in Nashville, but, like, you know, he retired in 2006, and then 2019 is when he took his own life. I mean, that's a long time to deal with that. You know, that's Wade Belak, if some people remember, his last game was in 2011, and he ended his life in 2011. I mean, it was not that long afterwards. I mean, he was dealing with these symptoms for a long time, and just my heart goes out to his family, Kristen Johnson, his wife, and everyone, and his two daughters, his brother. And it's just it's terrible. You really hope that somehow, some way, the league can figure this out and prevent more of this kind of thing from happening.
What do you think that would look like, Alex? You know, first of all, to your point, before you answer that, I think your point is well taken on like sort of like the misunderstandings about this. I think with football, people think about the huge hits, but some of the people most vulnerable are like the offensive linemen who get those subconcussive hits over and over again, right? Like, and it's like right. you could take, you know, that element out of football, and then it wouldn't look like football. But what do you think could be some of the answers in hockey?
I think the one thing they've already done is good, and that is the concussion spotter thing. Because I think in talking to former players, I think one of the things is, when they get a concussion, they sometimes they don't know, and the symptoms can be seen by other people. But then, you know, they just want to go back in the game. You know, they want to go back in the game, and that's going to make it 10 times worse. So, I think that is the something that needs to be used more, the concussion spotter thing. But I wish I had a better answer. I mean, I think, you know, helmet technology is one thing. I know that that's come a long way. I know the NFL has their I don't even know what you call those things, those helmet, what are those called?
Yeah, guardian caps, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That apparently the players hate because they don't look good, so that's good progress there on the issue at hand. But at least it's something, right? I mean, I don't know if the NHL could have something similar, but yeah, I mean, you just, we have to get better at understanding what this is, and because, look, it really affects players, and affects some players differently than others. I mean, his family said that, you know, they knew that something was wrong, and they knew that his concussions that he suffered while he was playing in the league really affected him. But you just don't know how bad it is until it can be diagnosed. So,
yeah, for sure. Transitioning from that part of it, what do you make of what the Predators have done on the ice with Stamkos, Marchessault, Shea coming in? And how does this elevate them in your mind, Alex, in terms of where they stack up among other Stanley Cup contenders in the league heading into this year?
I think they're instantly one of the better teams in the Western Conference. It remains to be seen how good. I mean, we really have to see this work first. But, I mean, I don't think they're as good as Dallas. I don't think they're as good as Vegas. I think Colorado is ahead of them. But after that, I don't see a lot of teams that stack up with them. I mean, people have put Minnesota ahead of them. People are still putting Winnipeg ahead of them. I think Nashville with these additions is at or above those teams. And then, of course, you got Vancouver and Edmonton. Edmonton is definitely above – I neglected to mention Edmonton. Edmonton is definitely above Nashville right now. But so what? They're the fifth best, sixth best team in the Western Conference. The Stamkos addition would have been enough to make them better. But they didn't just do that. They did Stamkos, Marchessault, Shea, and then even a backup goalie. And then, of course, bringing back Alex Carrier. So, I mean, those are huge additions. I mean, July 1 was the busiest day that I think I've ever had. I mean, these signings were just coming left and right. It could not – I mean, if it was – like I said, if it was just Steven Stamkos, it would have been a big day. But as soon as you find out about that one, then the next one hits, it was pretty wild. So I think it makes it better. I've been starting to look at lineups. I mean, I've seen a lot of people kind of constructing some lineups. I know I've heard you guys talk about, you know, the idea of, you know, should Tommy Novak be between Stamkos and Marchessault? I mean, there's a lot of options there. I've sort of played around with some things, but overall, the lineup is better than it was, you know, a month ago.
I was just about to, before you went back to, I'm like, wait, do we have an Oilers hater on our hands, Alex Doherty? So, of those teams you listed, the one that surprised me is you said Vegas is better. Do you think Vegas is better than the Preds still? I don't know that I agree with that.
I mean, I do. I think that they have a structure and a you know, their coaching is great. I can be convinced that they're not. I mean, I still think that they have a lot of, I mean, with Jack Eichel and Mark Stone, I mean, those two players alone make them very, very good.
How many players are going on LTIR? Have we factored
that in? Exactly.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
They have two different rosters, Joe. They got two teams over there.
That is a very fair point. Okay, can I follow up?
Yeah, Robbie? Go ahead.
Okay. So, what do you think is the sort of roster move? We know they have to get rid of somebody, but in terms of trading deadline, we've talked about the idea that Barry Trotz needs to gear up maybe to, you know, address center depth at some point still. Like this may be where, you know, where an Askarov, where some of that draft capital, whatever it is, and obviously you have to find that cap space, comes into play. Is that how you see it playing out, that now to kind of, if they're really good this year, you know, but maybe you can see that they still need help down the middle, that's sort of where it leads to some kind of a rental down the middle?
I haven't really gotten that far into looking at it. I don't think that they're gonna in any position right now to add at the trade deadline for like a center or something. But let me describe it like this. I think that it's really interesting that they made these additions but didn't really address the top line center thing. I mean, like, Stamkos is not really a top line center now. Marchessault's a wing. I think it's kind of interesting that was kind of like one of the big points, and Trotz didn't really address that. What I think that means is, I think he wants to see his lineup just be more interchangeable. I mean, Stamkos can play center. There's no doubt about that. I think you've got guys like Colton Sissons. I mean, the more I look at it, the more I kind of think Colton Sissons might be an option to play in between Stamkos and Marchessault, as opposed to a Tommy Novak. I know that Novak has the more offensive skill, but look at where Stamkos was playing last year in Tampa. His number one center, his primary center that he played with most of the time, was Anthony Cirelli, a player that I think is very comparable to Colton Sissons. So that worked. I mean, Stamkos had 40 goals last year. I think that you could see a scenario where Colton Sissons is the top two center on this team, which may be surprising to some people because, you know, they made all these changes and then now they're bringing up top six center Colton Sissons. But I think it would make, you know, the Novak Glass Evangelista line come out, or Novak Tomasino Evangelista, whatever it is, if Glass is here or not. So I think the answer, my answer, Joe, is I think that the centers are on this team now, but I think that there's just going to be more players that are just more interchangeable. I mean, Stamkos can play center, Glass and Novak and McCarron can all play center, Jankowski can play center, Sissons. I think there's just a lot of different moving parts. Now that they have the weapons around the outside, I think that makes your centers better. So I think that's what they're going to do. Now, I don't know about the changing of the you know, using the trade pieces and the Askarov and the draft picks. Maybe there is another move out there to get a better center depth player. But I think that they're kind of – this might be the roster we're looking at as we head into October.
Can't wait for the Stamkos, Sidney Crosby, Jonathan Marceau line next year. It's going to be awesome.
That's it. That's the move.
Yep. Coming.
Dreisaitl. Yep. At him.
Dreisaitl, exactly.
Yep. Good stuff.
Just have to cut seven players between now and then.
You'll see. We'll see what happens. Alex, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us, and we will talk to you soon.
Definitely. It'll be here before you know it. Absolutely. Take it easy, guys.
Alex Doherty from the Tennessee and our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. The Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Here's Commissioner Gary Bettman.
Hello, Columbus.
I'm going to egg your house.
Hello, Ottawa. I love your passion.
I'm going to egg your house.
Merci pour la bienvenue. Good afternoon.
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. And I think we found a new favorite clip for Nick Cusick.
I didn't realize, you like that way too much, man.
He loves the egging the house.
I have options. That's just this week.
You have now played I'm Going to Egg Your House like 19 times since I've said it.
Probably.
I like it.
I hope Katie's not listening. She got really mad at me for that. Like, I'm not actually going to egg anyone's house.
Let the record show that you did not egg anyone's house.
Well, no one set off fireworks.
There you go. Well,
I don't know if there's any sort of cause
and effect
there.
Maybe somebody in Nolensville will test it tonight.
I guess we'd also have to ask Gus, too, because Gus knows. You told us that you would take Gus with you, so I don't know if you've ever vented to him.
Gus, my dog?
Yes. You said you'd take Gus with you.
Well,
to
yeah.
the perpetrator's house.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he'd probably enjoy little egg throwing. He very much doesn't enjoy fireworks, so... Yes, if it ever happens, Gus will come with me.
It's good to know.
Yeah. So I'll make this quick, and then actually I want to get into a little bit of what Alex said on the Preds there.
Okay.
But this whole thing brings up something that I don't think you can say this enough. And the thing that's really disappointing for Gary Bettman's perspective is that he said several years ago he made comments about how there's no link and all this stuff. Between CTE and concussions, and that was several years ago. And at the time, I thought those comments were dumb. And there's more and more, obviously, that's happening. This is another tragic situation here involving a former Nashville Predator. You know, a year ago, Gary Bettman went on NPR and had an interview that actually got a little heated, which was good on the interviewer. A. Martinez on NPR's Morning Edition. I'm going to read some quotes that Gary Bettman gave just a year ago. Here's a quote. Quote from Gary Bettman. Quote, "We listen to the medical opinions on CTE, and I don't believe there has been any documented study that suggests that elements of our game result in CTE. There have been isolated cases of players who have played the game who have had CTE, but it doesn't mean that it necessarily came from playing in the NHL." End quote. And I don't expect Gary Bettman to sit here and say, absolutely, this is a huge issue. Look, people protect their businesses. I understand it. It's time to go ahead and pull back a little bit from this BS at this point, Gary, okay? And embrace the need to fully study this and understand it and show that you care about player safety. I mean, the NFL, they deserve all the criticism they got, and they resisted too. And eventually – they got to the point where, well, of course, they got sued, and that's a whole other story, but got to the point where it was understood that you must, like in 2016, so we're talking 8 years ago, the NFL did acknowledge the link between CTE and playing football, concussion protocols, player safety efforts, those are happening in both leagues, but you got to acknowledge it. Like, enough of the BS. I mean, give me a freaking break. So I'd like to
see. It's all about the lawsuit, though, right? I mean, they're scared to death.
Again, and I understand. I don't expect him to come out and say, we know for sure that if you're going to say what that quote that I just read is, then shut up and don't say anything.
Right.
That would be my advice to you. So that's what I have to say about that. On the Preds front, I think Alex and I are of the same mind. Colton Sissons, number two or one, center, Nashville Predators. What do you say?
I say if that's the case, then the idea that I've thrown out there that you need to go get somebody else to play center at the deadline becomes even more important. That would be what I would say to that. And again, I'm not trying to bash Colton Sissons.
What a
Sissons
hater.
Because I love me some Colton Sissons. I've spoken with Colton Sissons for a long time.
Number one center.
Yeah.
Hat trick. I remember that day. We were both in Bridgestone that day.
We were. It was a good day. Look, I like Colton Sissons. I think if Colton Sissons is your third line center, you're in good shape. If he's your fourth line center, you're in good shape. They, to me, that's still the biggest hole they have on their roster is another centerman. And I hear what Alex is saying about they didn't solve the number one center thing. That's a pretty difficult problem to solve. Like, right. There's just not a lot of those guys out there. So I still think long term, you got to get there at some point. Now, are they going to get there in the next 3 years in this window they've got right now? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But I think the shopping list for Barry Trotz at the top of it right now, if they're as good as I think they're going to be next year, I think at the top of that shopping list, you need to go ahead and get ready for a deadline acquisition of a top six centerman to come in there and play. And maybe your center depth, even if you do that, it's probably not going to be as good as some of your other Western Conference teams. Like, we know it's not going to be as good as Edmonton's. We know it's probably not going to be as good as some of your upper echelon center. Like, it's not, you don't have Nathan McKinnon walking around on your team. But if you could kind of deploy them where it's O'Reilly, maybe somebody comparable to O'Reilly in after that, and then you've got Novak and Sissons slotted below that, then I think you're fine at that position. So I think Barry Trotz needs to already be thinking about adding to that, and I think he probably is.
I think both things are true. I agree with you that that's got to be in mind for them. But also, I agree with what Alex said about – I don't know. I mean, Ethan Perry in the YouTube chat says, I love Sissons, but he's a long ways away from Anthony Cirelli. But I get what he's saying, and I do think if you do that and then you can keep Novak and Evangelista together, which was pretty effective in the regular season at least last year. It was, you know, there were some times when, like, their chemistry is pretty good. Then you have that third line, and you're thinking in terms of top nine, you know, like Trotz always talks about.
Yep.
And I know that Colton Sissons is raising his hand right now and saying, yes, please let me play with Stamkos and Marchessault a little bit.
Yeah.
Look, I can do it.
He could do it. And, like, it's not like you're going to get burned with Colton Sissons out there. Colton, they need – you need somebody that gets the puck to Stamkos and gets the puck to Marchessault. And as good as Colton Sissons is, and he's a really good player, I would not consider Colton Sissons at the top of the playmaking skill set list. Like, they need they need somebody to get them the puck.
But, okay, so let's just make it a binary choice. Those are your wings. That's how you're doing it. You're keeping the top line together, and you're the coach. So, and it's your choice is either Sissons with those guys or Novak with those guys.
Novak.
Okay.
Don't feel great about it, but Novak. Like, because I know that Novak can get them the puck.
He's got a little bit more offensive juice.
Yeah. It's a big year. Like, you're going to find out a lot about Tommy Novak this year. I think, look, they gave him the contract. The contract is fine. Like, it's not a huge financial burden that they're paying Tommy Novak. But they need him to step it up. Like, he's got to be the best version of whatever that looks like for him. He's got to be that this year. And I think you're going to give him a shot to play with those two guys. And then if it doesn't work, then you go from there and maybe you try Sissons. But his playmaking ability, I would at least start it there. That's just me.
What about you, Nick Kieser?
Yeah, it's an interesting thought for sure. I was signaling for a break, but that's okay.
Just answer the question quickly and we'll go to break.
Besides, I go to break. You don't tell me when to go to break.
That's true.
Ooh.
That is factual.
He's still not answering the question.
I know.
We keep going to break.
No, I'm not going to say Parsonen. No, Robbie, I do think Sissons might be a better idea than Tommy. I mean,
2-1.
Tommy's going to need to have a bigger training camp for me to see more, to see
guys,
if he
Colton
can actually
Sissons
handle
is
it.
Not a top six forward.
He's not. I agree
so
with
why
you.
Why do we keep continuing to try to put
is
him
Tommy
in the top
Novak?
Six?
Veterans with
is
vets.
Tommy Novak?
Make
Tommy
more sense.
Novak is more of a top six forward than Colton Sissons is. But to answer your question, no. I don't think Tommy Novak is, which is why they need to go get another center.
They have 5 picks in the first 3 rounds. I think they can do it based off those picks from this year's draft coming up.
It's time to go to break.
Let's go to break. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will be with us coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.